When someone is hurt in a truck accident, the one question everyone has is, why did this terrible collision happen? To answer that question takes an experienced team of lawyers and experts. Not everyone has this type of experience. At Colombo Law, we are truck injury lawyers. It's what we do every day. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
Dub Nation. Dub Nation. What you're about to hear is not an interview. It's a conversation, between friends.
So I thought we'd just talk a little hoops with a good friend of mine, Stephen Douglas Kerr.
KNBR presents The Steve Kerr Show with his former teammate, Tom Tolbert.
The stadium should get a free beer on Tom Tolbert night. It would be appropriate.
Along with Adam Copeland. It's Tolbert, Copes, and the head coach of your reigning champs, Steve Kerr, on The Sports Leader. Dr. Junk.
Time for our weekly conversation with the head coach of the Warriors, Stephen Douglas Kerr. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hello, guys. What's happening?
Not a whole lot. How are you?
I'm doing well. I got the house to myself, other than two dogs and a football game on.
Nice.
So that's a pretty good setup.
Wow. You're going to be in the same boat as I am. Everybody went out for the night, so it's just me. I got the dog, the two cats, and the turtle. And the football game.
Perfect.
It'll be a good night. It's like, oh, it's bliss.
It kind of is.
Yeah. So something you said after the Mavericks game kind of caught my ear, because I was thinking the same exact thing. That's the best I've ever seen Jonathan Kuminga play. Yeah. He ran the court. He played D. He rebounded. He didn't force anything. It was just everything was in the flow of the offense, and he did all the little things to affect the game without scoring that you want to see him do. He was really good in that game.
He really was, and it wasn't a surprise, because he's been good now for three or four games in a row. I think it was the Utah game where he played 13 minutes and went 0-for-0, did not score. And in the locker room afterwards, I told him how great he was. And he looked at me like I was nuts. Like, what are you talking about? You know? But he was. He was really good, because he did exactly what we needed. You know, he played defense and impacted the game. And so I think what's happening is he's realizing his role and how he can make an impact using his gifts, his athleticism, his strength, his size. And that, you know, making an impact doesn't just mean, you know, getting the ball and putting it in the basket. It's you know, supporting the guys around him who are already doing that, like Steph and Clay, and supplementing them by running the floor. I mean, you saw he got, I think, three dunks in that Dallas game just by running the floor or cutting behind the defense. And he's a, you know, as he goes, he'll be able to score more. But if he just locks in on the defensive stuff and just moving the ball, and a lot of stuff will fall into place for him.
Well, it's interesting, because you said something similar to Steph in New York a few years ago, where he didn't score a lot, he didn't shoot a lot, but you were just saying how much easier it is for everybody out there just because you're out there. You're out there, and everybody's paying attention to you. We always talk about the gravity of Curry. Like, guys have to notice that somebody else notices that, hey, look, it's not just about scoring. Like, it's about impacting the game. Scoring is one way to impact the game. Diving on the floor is another way. Setting a great screen is another way. Making a really nice pass. Making a proper rotation. Like, there's so many ways that you can impact the game, but guys usually, and still to this day, look at the right side of the box score to see if they impacted the game. But that's only, it's the part of the game that gets the most attention, because that's the point of the game, to score and stop other teams from scoring. But there are just so many other ways that you can help a team win. We call it winning plays. And guys have to notice that, like, hey, I am doing something out here. And the more they notice that and notice that other people are noticing, I think the more they'll do it.
Yeah, especially because when I say that to JK, when I say, hey, you're doing well, I actually attach playing time to it. You know,
that always works.
That usually gets the job done.
There's no doubt about it. So, did you look at that game in a sense that, because I said, look, they lost the game to Dallas, but it was a really good game. Both teams played well. It's just, you know, Luka's going to be Luka sometimes. They hit some shots that they weren't hitting, but Luka hit some shots in that game that were just insane. Like some of the stuff, the leaners, the floaters from like 10 feet, and then some of the passes he was dropping on his teammates. Yeah. Like sometimes Luka's just going to be Luka, just like Steph's going to be Steph sometimes. And if you lose a close game like that, you don't really have any complaints. It's like, hey, we had a shot. We missed a shot at the end. Take that every time. And they beat us.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we played well enough to win. The ball just didn't go in, and that, you know, happened. It doesn't happen often with our guys as good as they are shooting the ball, but it does happen occasionally. I thought Dallas played great. You know, they were on a four-game losing streak. They hadn't made much of anything. They were really struggling. And but we kind of expect teams to make shots, you know, against us. I mean, we're the defending champs, and people are fired up to play us. And early in the season, I was expecting guys to make shots against us because we weren't guarding them. But that's not the case anymore. We're guarding. We're doing a much better job guarding. I think over the last 10 games, we're, you know, 10th or 11th in the league in defense, which is a huge step up. So I thought we played well enough to win. It was just one of those nights where, you know, they made more shots, and, you know, you kind of just move on because there are a lot of good things. Like you said, I mean, the bench came in and really got us back in, and it just feels like we're in a much better place now than we were a couple weeks ago.
How big a turning point was the New York game for Clay in that? That was the game where caught the ball, double team, pass it along, just stay in the flow of the offense, hit shots, make shots, miss shot, whatever. Just play basketball. Because before, every time he hit a shot before that, it's almost like he got too excited when he hit a shot. And then when he missed a shot, he got too down on himself for missing a shot. It seems like now he's in a place like, look, I'm going to get my shots. I'm just going to do the other things and make or miss. I'm going to keep taking those shots, but I'm not going to get too pumped up if I make a shot, get too upset if I miss a shot. I'm just going to go out there and play. And it seemed like that New York game really kind of slowed him down a little bit.
It did. And you know, I think just by being more patient, he literally slowed down in a good way. You know, the game slowed down for him with his patience. And, now, Clay is so big, and he shoots the ball from you know, really up high. It's tough to challenge his shot, so he can take his time a little bit and assess and realize if two people are running at him, you know, he can move the ball. And I think you're right. That Knicks game, he made several passes to Looney after Looney had set the screen because Looney's guy jumped out at Clay, and just by hitting Looney, then it's a 4-on-3. It's either a layup for Looney or a swing, and, you know, everybody's involved. And so that was the key game, and I think ever since he's been just really solid, taking good shots and playing at a high level.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
Talking to Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Warriors, on the UMA guest line. In terms of what we were talking about with Jonathan Kuminga, when you see a game like that and a performance like that, we were raving about his rebounds in that game. I think he had 11, like 14 points and 11 boards or something, and a few of them were really impressive where he was cutting through lanes to rip them off the glass. When you see stuff like that, do you start to look at what his abilities, like what his max at that ability could be? Do you see that that's maybe an asset that's going to excel for him rather than it's just an explosion for one game? When you talk to him about that performance, is it about what he did well and how he can do that consistently and add that element to his game day to day?
Yeah, I mean, what's exciting is that given his physical gifts, I mean, that is what's there for him night after night, you know, being a great defender and impacting the game on the glass and running the floor, because those things, as we talked about, they all lead to winning. They all lead to, you know, winning a possession, you know, and you stack those together enough, you win a quarter, you win a half, you win a game. And that's what it's all about. And there's just not many human beings on earth who are, you know, as athletic and powerful as JK. So that's the idea. You know, you want that impact to come. You want that awareness to come. And then as he gets older, you know, then you add to that and he becomes a more prominent part of the team from a scoring standpoint. But, you know, right now we got lots of guys who can score, you know, so he can handle that part of the game and it's going to help us win.
I may have said this two, three, maybe even four times, but I'll say it again, see if you agree. Has Steph ever played any better than he's playing right now?
I don't think so. I think just from when you look at the total game, I mean, he's finishing at the rim better than he's ever done, I think, just because he's physically stronger. I don't think he's ever been in better shape. The endurance is incredible. You know, the three-point shooting, the numbers are crazy. My favorite thing about Steph is that these three-point shooting numbers come with the caveat of, oh yeah, he's like 0 for 10 on half court shots this year.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the matter with him? Yeah. Steve, what's the matter with Steph? Yeah.
Yeah, he's not making his half court shots this year. But he's like the only guy in the league who doesn't care about the percentage and just says, you know what, I'm going to make one of these and it's going to bring the house down and going to make me happy and we're going to, you know, it's going to help us win a game. And I love that about him. I mean, but to your point, Tom, I agree. He's never been better.
Did you ever do that? Did you ever catch a ball and like do the pump fake and not have to shoot it?
I did. I will gladly admit.
Shame.
I know. I know. But you know what? It was all I had. I just, you know.
It was all I had.
It was all I had. All I got, Tom. All I got is my three-point percentage. I couldn't do that. Yeah,
that's all he's got. It's a good move, Steve.
That's
smart business.
That's all I had. I was clinging to it.
Hang on.
It's funny. Now, did you go with the, like, extra dribble and try? Because my favorite is when the guys shoot it a half a second late. It's like, well, just dribble it out. Don't shoot it. Don't try to tell me I tried to get this one off when everybody in the building knows you didn't try to get. Or they'll dribble right into a defender and then pump fake. It's like, bro, you didn't have to dribble into him. You could have dribbled away from him. Yeah, I know, but then I couldn't have pump faked. I could pump fake. What was your move of choice at the end of the game? The pump fake or just dribble it out or maybe even fumble the ball? That's one of my favorites.
Oh, the fumble. Yes. No, but then you risk a turnover. Nobody wants a turnover either.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
Yeah, so for the record, I never passed one up in the playoffs. Always shot them in the playoffs.
Yes.
And that was, you know, you don't mess around then. No, I was a half second late guy, you know.
Were you?
Yeah, you know, you try to fool everybody like, hey, well, I tried to shoot it. Like, I was just a little late, you know.
It's a can't lose because if it goes in, everybody's happy. And then they're like, oh, man, he just missed getting it off. And it doesn't hurt your percentage no matter what. It's a win-win.
That's right. And I only made one. I only made one in my career. And, of course, it was in a playoff game.
Do you remember what were the circumstances?
It was again. I was in Cleveland '92 playoffs, and we were playing the Celtics, and we won the series in seven. I can't remember what game it was, but it was at the end of the first quarter, I think. The thing that always stands out about that series, though, was we won game seven at home, and the ball boy walks in, and he says, Larry Bird wants the game ball. And everybody just looked at each other and was like, oh, my God, Larry Bird's retiring. Like, you don't ask for the game ball when you lose game seven. And so that was when our whole team was like, wow, Bird's retiring. And, you know, the ball boy, took the game ball back to him. And so, Bird got the game ball from a game seven loss.
Wow. Huh. Interesting. That is interesting. Hey.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
I still contend, and then there may be other teams out there that I'm not thinking of, because there were a lot of good Sonic teams, the Jazz teams you guys beat when you were in Chicago. But I had contended for a long time that Cavaliers team that you were a part of was the best team to never win a championship, because that team was loaded, and not just loaded starters. I mean, you guys had a nice bench too. I mean, that was a really good team. We remember the Jordan shot against Elo, of course, but when you look back over the course of the NBA, and again, the Sonics were good, the Jazz were good. There are other teams probably out there that I'm forgetting, but I don't know if there was a team better than that team, because that was a dominant team.
Yeah, that was a great team. Mark Price was an incredible point guard. Brad Doherty at the time was one of the top centers in the league. And
Ron Harper.
You had Ron Harper. You had Larry Nance. Larry
Elo.
Craig Elo. Yeah, those were great teams. Lenny Wilkins coaching. Mm-hmm. I was there for I think three and a half years before I became a magician, got traded to Orlando with your teammates. but those were good. Those were really fun years. We kept running into the Bulls with Jordan, and it was just one of those teams, classic case of just coming around at the wrong time.
So we've talked about this, the travelings, and how they seem to be more frequent now. The carries a lot more frequent. We've talked about the carries on the post that need to be called if they're going to call the carries on the outside. How do we get more consistency with these? Because I feel like we're running into the umpires in baseball back in the 90s and 2000s before we had the strike zone, where it's like, oh, you gotta get used to Larry Vanover's strike zone. You gotta get used to Hirschbeck's strike zone. It's like, well, isn't there just a strike zone? Do we have to get used to like someone's strike zone every single game? I feel like different crews may call the traveling. They may pay attention to it a little bit more than other crews, and that's where you run into a problem, because coaches and the players never know what to expect from game to game. How do you think you go about getting more consistency? Because I do agree with you. They should call it. You change pivot feet, you call it. You drag the foot, you call it. But it's got to be consistent from night to night, because the players aren't going to know what the hell to expect.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but that's all anybody wants is consistency. And I think, after watching the tape, we were called for seven travels that night, and all seven were definitely traveling violations, including the one at the end with Steph. It was close, but he definitely picked up that mm-hmm. pivot foot. But when you watch it and you see all the carries by Luka that are uncalled, when he's posting up, I mean, he literally got his hand all the way underneath the ball, which is a huge advantage for the offensive player to be able to do that for a number of reasons. But that's the frustrating part. Is it, and as we sit here, a month into this re-emphasis of traveling violations by the NBA, I think Jordan Poole's been called for probably seven carrying violations during that time, and we couldn't get one on Luka. So that bothered me, and that's, I think the league, to their credit, is really trying to address this They're trying to be more consistent with it, and you know, we'll see how it plays out.
You know, that's a term that's an axiom that's used in baseball a lot with the strike zone. Just as long as you're consistent, players will deal with it. And I've always thought, is that true? Like, what if you're consistently horse crap? Is everybody going to be okay with that? Like, if you call strike 2 feet outside the strike zone, but you consistently call that, yeah. Does everyone just say, you know what he's called it all game long, no big deal. I can't hit it, but it's that's fine.
That was so bad. I just gave you, like, the total platitude, the total, like, athlete cliche.
Yep.
As long as they're consistent, we'll be fine.
I said that to him, too. I said he was very...
If they're consistently bad, I will be screaming at the officials. What am I talking about?
I said to Tom, he's very careful after the game. Very diplomatic, Steve was with his response. Well,
Steve will be consistent with his screaming at the officials,
that's good.
Of course.
Yeah.
Steve, go enjoy the football game. Enjoy the dogs, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, right, guys.
Stevie. See you, Steve.
I'll talk to you.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.